Welcome into the lounge presented by DraftKings. I'm Ryan Mink, joined by Garrett Downing, and we are going to break down the biggest questions for the Ravens heading into this year's draft, which is now. Garrett, we're 2 days away.
It's hard to believe. It's one of those things you talk about and you feel like it's never actually going to get here, but in you know, 48 hours, Eric DaCosta is going to be on the clock, and it's going to be exciting to see how this weekend plays out.
The best part is that it means the end of my minkering. I can't wait till the draft gets here so I can just finally sleep and stop fooling around with my 7-round Ravens mock draft. I know you locked yours in today.
Well, mostly locked. Mostly locked. Well, I mean, here's the truth. You're saying it's the end of your minkering, but like, this is really when your minkering reaches new heights. Like, you're saying it's the end, but like, we are in the middle of it. Like, this might be the eye of the hurricane, because these next, like, we have not recorded our 7-round mock draft episode. For those of you listening, that is going to drop tomorrow. Okay, so that is going to come out tomorrow. That's where we do all the Ravens picks through all 7 rounds and give you our prediction for how this thing is going to play out. And Mink is famous. If you're wondering what the term minkering is, Mink is famous for tinkering with his mock draft up until the 11th hour, sometimes past that. So
sometimes past that. It's true. He's not wrong. He tells no lies. all right, so let's take on the biggest draft questions. And I think the conversation for the Ravens has really centered on offensive tackles. We've talked a lot about them, right? And the big question to me going into this are one of the top 8 guys there for the Ravens, which and who it could be? Which offensive tackles are left on the board at number 30? Garrett, you feel pretty confident that one of those top guys is going to be there.
Yeah, and when you say 8, why do you say 8? Like, why is that the number in your head?
That's where I generally see kind of the shelf, the continental shelf, right? Is like the 8 guys. And if that all gets picked clean, then, you know, it's a question of whether the Ravens see it differently. Do they see it as 9 deep in first round tackles? Maybe they see it as 7. I don't know. And I think the question for me becomes, after you get past that first kind of tier, then is the next tier, are those guys going to be ready week 1 to step into a starting role at right tackle, for example? Or might they need a little bit of time? And you have Daniel Falele, friend of the lounge, and he steps in. So those are kind of the primary questions to me.
Yeah, I think that all makes sense. When I look at it, when you say, I think one of those 8 guys is going to be there, I think that the 2 guys who have kind of been clumped together, who have been mocked to the Ravens plenty of times, it's Amarius Mims out of Georgia and Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma. On paper, they're similar. They're both big guys. They're tall, 6'8". Mims is bigger. Guyton has almost more of a basketball build to a certain extent. But those two guys, like, they both have similar scouting reports in that the experience is limited based on different factors. But they've got these intangibles, this great size, this athleticism that NFL teams could fall in love with. I think that one of those two will be there. I do. I think that one of those two will be there. And I think that the Ravens, I think of the two, it's probably more likely that Guyton's there. But if a team really likes his ability and feels like he could be a plug-and-play guy, and, you know, I think that maybe he goes first. Like, but I do think that one of those two players will be there when the Ravens are on the clock. That's my guess. The other one, who I'm also going to throw in the mix there, is Jordan Morgan out of Arizona. And now, he's not necessarily, when you read the scouting reports and you read the big boards from draft analysts, he's typically below those guys in the rankings. But what he does, he doesn't have the same size. He's 6'5", 320 pounds, so he's not 6'8". But he was a really good player throughout college, has been a left tackle in his career, throughout his career, 3-year starter. So I think that, like, he is a plug and play guy as well. And so when you talk about that shelf there, I think he is in that category where he could come in and potentially be a day one starter for you.
Right. I think this is kind of 2-part. So let's just go through the list here. Joe Alt, Fashanu, JC Latham, Talese Fuaga, Troy Faltanu, those guys are probably all long gone, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get into a couple guys who, they're good players, probably not at the position that the Ravens are necessarily looking for. You get into a Graham Barton and a Jackson Powers Johnson, right? And this is where I'm talking about my 7, 8, you know, 9, right? Like, Graham Barton played left tackle at Duke, but a lot of people see him as really kind of maybe even possibly a center as his best position or guard, right? This is a guy, super athletic, just tested off the charts. But, you know, 6'5", you know, 313, 320, do you see, you know, is that guy a left tackle? I don't know. That might not be his best fit in the NFL. And then Jackson Powers Johnson, another center, right? So, like, if you're the Ravens, you want to see those guys get picked probably, right? Now, if Graham Barton was sitting there at 30, maybe they say he's just too good. Like, we'll take this guy. The position flexibility, he can play guard, he can play tackle, he's not going to play center, I'll tell you that much. But, like, you know, he's just too good to pass up. So, but I think in an ideal circumstance, those two guys go to teams that are looking for offensive linemen. Like, let's say the Packers, let's say the Cowboys, some of those teams who could draft a center. Eagles, right? They could draft a center. You want to see those guys get picked ahead of the tackles, in my opinion, if you're the Ravens.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And then that's, right. You know, like, looking at Graham Barton as an example, and honestly, I do wonder if the success of Tyler Linderbaum, the immediate success that he's had, will have any impact
right. On
other guys, other teams saying, you know what, like, Tyler Linderbaum, he had some questions about size, and you wondered about making that transition because he's, you know, an undersized guy, and could he play at the NFL level, and all that stuff that we heard about when the Ravens drafted him 2 years ago, and then he's been a plug-and-play starter at center and a Pro Bowler. So right. He answered those questions loud and clear, and so I actually do wonder if there's any element of, like, Graham Barton, what positions is he going to play, whatever, size, that stuff, and the team's like, you know what, let's just take him. He's a great player, and then he ends up going before the Ravens are on the clock.
Well, he'd be like a big center. He would be a big center. But his size for center, but yeah.
The questions on his size are as him as a tackle.
Right, right.
That's where the size question is.
Teams are like, look at how valuable Tyler Linderbaum became for the Ravens in their offense. Like, yeah, I'll invest a first-round pick in that, mid-to-late first-round pick in a center. Tyler Linderbaum was 25. That pick has paid off. That's been a hit. That's been a home run. And so, like, you kind of want to get those guys picked because now, all right, you know, Steelers are another team that could certainly pick a tackle, right? Like, the more those guys that get picked, the better the chances are of the Ravens having one of those two tackles, and let's just say a Tyler Guyton and a Marius Mims fall to them. I don't have as much faith as you do that one of those two guys is going to be there. I put it at, like, 25%, honestly. And so then, if that's the case, right, then to kind of to your point, it's like, all right, Jordan Morgan, you know, interesting tweet this morning that I saw, Patrick Paul, you know, said, yeah, expect me to go late first round. Like, a lot of these mock drafts, he's a tackle from Houston, left tackle. Like, a lot of these mock drafts don't have the board ranked the way that teams do. Expect me to go late first round, right? And I'm like, all right, like, there seems to be some of this last minute chatter seems to be like, oh, like, there's not a consensus on the tackles. Some teams have some guys, Daniel Jeremiah tweeted about, he's like, some of these tackles that I'm hearing about people putting up in, like, the first half of the second round in there, you know, in top 50, like, I just can't get down with that, you know, like,
are you so buying into your a guy's hyping up his own draft stock and you're like, well, maybe that might happen.
Right. I mean, maybe, like, he might just be pumping himself. He might just be pumping himself, right? 100%. But, like, I'm not ruling it out. Like, there's a lot of tackles that are really toolsy in this draft, right? You look at a Suamatia, Patrick Paul, like, checks every box from size, you know, mobility, all that stuff. Like, you know, Jordan Morgan's another one, experienced guy. Like, he can play tackle. He's might be a better guard, but he can definitely play tackle. Like, I think there could be a range of opinions about some of these guys. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all kind of shakes down. And some people think Amarius Mims might be the last of that group taken. And if so, yippee for the Ravens.
Yeah. I mean, I think if he's there at 30, I think he would make a ton of sense. And that could just be a don't overthink it. Take that pick up and run it in. And you have a guy who could be a plug and play starter at tackle. I think
some people think like he's only a right tackle. like that other guys have way more position flexibility than Amarius Mims, and that so that might ding him.
Yeah.
On top of the lack of experience.
Right. Well, then he would come in, he would compete with our guy, Fa'alele, you know, who, by the way, if you haven't done it.
That's fine for the Ravens.
Yeah, yeah. If you haven't done so, go back and check out the podcast we did with Daniel that dropped last week. And, you know, if they were to draft Mims and he's competing with Fa'alele for that right tackle job, talk about two big boys there competing for a starting job, you know, at the tackle position. You know, I think that if what you are predicting comes to fruition, which is that these tackles are off the board, well, then the Ravens will find themselves in a situation where somebody falls. Like, if it's not a tackle who falls, all of a sudden it's like there's eight tackles off the board before the Ravens pick. There's going to be five, six, maybe quarterbacks who are taken before the Ravens are on the board. Of course, some defensive players. Like, if all those tackles are gone, then you could find yourself in a just, all right, fine. Really good defensive player has now fallen to us at that spot. So, like, who would be that guy in your mind? Like, all the tackles are gone. There's the quarterbacks, of course, are gone. Who are the players who you think would be really good options then for the Ravens at 30?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's tough to figure out, but I would. A guy that I would hope that would mean that could fall would be Cooper DeJean, the corner safety out of Iowa, and I know what you're gonna say. You're not kind of as down with this pick as I am, Garrett. but they're different sizes, but in terms of like skill set versatility, sign me up for Kyle Hamilton 2.0. I mean, I think this guy could be really good, and you know, physically. He did really well at his pro day. He's got pick production in college. I think the way the Ravens play their secondary with moving pieces around, he's a really good fit for that. And so you can still play Kyle Hamilton line of scrimmage. You can play Cooper DeJean back. You play Cooper DeJean outside. You can look at Brian Branch and how good he was for the Detroit Lions playing like in the slot. Like that was, you know, another kind of safety hybrid coming out of Alabama, like really good pick for them. Cooper DeJean, if he were to slide down to 30 because all these tackles are going, I think that would be a home run pick for the Ravens.
Well, I agree with you actually on the position. I think that if the tackles are gone, then I think the Ravens are probably going to be staring at a corner in the face. And that could be Cooper DeJean, who I like. I just, you know, the Ravens have their jack of all trades, Swiss Army knife in the back end, and that's Kyle Hamilton. And I do think that, like, the counter is like, well, can you have too many of him? Well, no, but I think we're like, I pumped the brakes a little bit by saying, like, you just got another Kyle Hamilton. Like, Kyle Hamilton is rare. He was a 14th overall pick, should have gone higher, obviously. And, like, he's an incredibly rare blend of athleticism and ability, and he can play on the line of scrimmage, he can play back, all that stuff. So I feel like comparing anybody to him is like, I get the comps, but I think that like it's a bit unfair. But going back to my original point on corner is like, I do think there will be a good corner staring them in the face if the tackles are gone. And that could be Cooper DeJean. It could be Kool-Aid McKinstry out of Alabama. It could be Nate Wiggins out of Clemson. I think that it's probably one of those three guys who you're looking at in that situation.
Yeah, I think Kool-Aid would probably be the most likely of the ones that you mentioned. I think Nate Wiggins is probably going to get taken, just that speed, and I think he's going to get scooped up. But Kool-Aid, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he's dealing with a foot issue, you know, but he's kind of been the guy that made too much sense that nobody was talking about this whole pre-draft process around Baltimore. It's like, all right, this is a really confident, like, plays with swagger, Alabama corner, right? Who's, like, just really smooth, just has a knack for playing the position. He knows what he's doing out there, like, really good at anticipation, all that kind of stuff. Like, he makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, that could certainly be the pick for the Ravens, and I agree with you. I think if you're looking at most likely, if it's not a tackle, I probably do think it's corner and maybe wide receiver, but I would put corner above that.
Yeah, and if it's receiver, the players that you're looking at there, you're talking about Ladd McConkey, you're talking about Adonai Mitchell.
Maybe I think Adonai Mitchell would be the one that I would look at.
Yeah, Xavier Worthy, you know, depending on how you feel about him. Those are the guys that are probably in that mix.
Right. Yeah, I mean, a Donny Mitchell might be, like, if he were to fall to the Ravens, I mean, he could be a top 20 player on their board. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like Eric DaCosta said, basically, their strategy when you're picking at 30 is you hope and pray that somebody from your top 20 gets down there. Could a Donny Mitchell be that? He could. You know, he could be a top 20 talent in their view. So
let's hang on the receiver conversation here for a bit. Like, I guess why if he's receivers, it goes both ways here, where receivers can fly up the board. You can see the run. The run happened last year. The Ravens were right in the middle of the run where four straight guys went. And so receivers all of a sudden start to fly up the board because it's such a premium position. I think teams have seen, like, the Ravens want to restock the receiver position through the draft because receivers are expensive. And the Ravens aren't the only team that has that approach. A lot of teams want to restock the receiver position through the draft. And there's a lot of good ones coming out of college. At the same time, teams also know you can get some really good receivers throughout the draft. And so you could wait, you know, and that's part of the conversation as well. Do you wait because you think you could get a good one in the second round? And so that's all part of the balancing act. But if receivers typically go early, and looking at a Donny Mitchell, maybe he's a top 20 prospect, I'm having a hard time seeing how he would get there to number 30.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know that he's necessarily on a lot of teams' board a top 20 guy. I'm just saying he could be, you know, like, I think he certainly could get there to 30. That wouldn't shock me. And I agree that the wide receiver depth is there, but it's been there for the past 2, 3, 4 years. Like, every year we're saying this now.
It's the same thing, yeah.
There's a lot of good wide receivers coming out, and guess what? Teams don't wait on them. You know, a bunch of them still get first picked in the first round. So, like, I don't necessarily think that just because the depth is there. Here's the interesting thing that concerning wide receiver depth. I think that there's more. I think teams are going to be in a rush to get their first round tackle and say there's a lot of good second round wide receivers. Like, if your needs are tackle and receiver, my inclination is that teams are going to run and get that tackle first round and they're going to wait to get the second round receiver. That's what I think is going to happen.
If what you're saying comes to fruition, then that doesn't really bode well for the Ravens because they're drafting at the end of both rounds.
It does not bode well.
They probably have to, like, they probably have to zag on everybody because if everyone's going tackle, then they may say, all right, now let's take our first round receiver or our first round corner. And then in the second round, if the receivers are all getting taken, that's when you
take your tackle.
Right.
I think it could play out that way for Baltimore. That's how I think it could. And so that's like why I wouldn't be shocked. You know, I know we've been saying, oh, Eric DaCosta, he's taken a first round wide receiver 3 times in the past 5 years. You know, would he do it again? I think he could. I think he could, you know, like, I have a feeling that those tackles, and there's going to be even teams trading up to get tackles. I think Washington's a team to watch. They're going to be trying to move up to get a tackle. Like, could the Ravens even trade up and try to grab a tackle? I think there's going to be a real run on those tackles.
Yeah, I mean, you could be right. I think with both Mims and Guyton, like, neither of them, and this is probably the case every year when you're talking about, like, the 6th, 7th, 8th best tackle on the board, but, like, a lot of talent, but neither is, like, a perfect prospect. And that's why they would be available at the end of the first round. But I just don't know that I see that tackle board. I don't know. I don't see it the same way that I see the tackle board being picked clean before the Ravens are on the clock. I don't see it playing out that way.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not. So what player or position do you think, like, would be the shocker for you?
I guess I would probably go back to wide receiver. Like, that would be the most surprising, barring, like, you know, the true, like, a shock, like, okay, a quarterback, that would shock me. That would be very shocking. No, so, like,
I'm saying everything legitimate, like,
within the realm of possibility here, I don't think that pass rusher, like, would be a shock at all. Chop Robinson, if he's there, like, he could certainly be the pick, and I don't think that would be that surprising. Mm-hmm.
Darius Robinson would be another guy I would say that would not shock me. It would be a guy that not a lot of people have talked about, but, like, feels like a Ravens type player.
Yeah.
So, big, like, rugged edge.
Mm-hmm. So if they draft a outside linebacker, pass rusher, like wouldn't shock me. Corner would not shock me. Offensive tackle, we just covered that. It probably would be receiver, just because there's more pressing needs on the team right now. Mm-hmm. They've taken all these first round receivers in five of Eric DaCosta's drafts. Are they really going to go back to that and try that again this year? So for those reasons, that would surprise me. And then, like, I just don't even see, if it's not one of those four positions, like, I don't see it. Like, I don't, unless you're counting Cooper DeJean as a safety, but right. I'm like, I don't know, what would the other position be?
I mean, the other one would be like one of those defensive tackles, you know, Jerzon Newton, Johnny Newton or whatever.
Yeah, I guess that would really surprise me. But
that would be a big surprise. I think to me, if we're like, holy cow, it's that like the Ravens have moved up to go get one of those guys. I mean, like a Byron Murphy. Just speaking about defensive tackles, like if he were to somehow slip, again, that would be a surprise. But like to me, the biggest surprise would be a big trade, either up, back, or trading a player.
Yeah, of course, I agree. I mean, I think the draft day trades are like the things that make your jaw drop on draft weekend. Also, when you make a trade, whatever it is, honestly, if it's moving up, if it's moving back, if it's a player, like when those draft day trade happens, when those trades happen, like it's exciting and it's shocking. So if the Ravens move up to get a player, I think it would be surprising, just because that's typically not their MO. I think a lot of times
they're much more likely to go back.
Like. And I guess I should refine my statement a little bit, because if they trade back from 30, then
that would not be a shock.
That would not be a shock.
It would be kind of how far they go.
Of course, yeah. If they move back into the second round, it wouldn't be a shock. It would just be for anybody that stayed up late Thursday night, it would just be a disappointment.
That's correct. But it would make for a very exciting Friday.
It would make for a very exciting Friday, but it already is an exciting Friday. You know, this is just me speaking selfishly here, but it already is the exciting Friday. So, you know, having that pick that Thursday is, want that. You want that pick.
It's a big womp womp if you finish Thursday without a player. It's a womp right. womp.
So that's why actually the next big question here is the trade, which we've kind of arrived here naturally. Like, how likely do you think it is that the Ravens trade that 30th pick?
I think that I would probably put it at about 40%.
Okay. All right. Now break down that percentage more. Which direction are you going with that 40%?
I would put it more likely back, but I am certainly not ruling out a move up. You know what? You know what? I'm gonna minker this. I'm actually gonna go 60%. I'm going 60%. Oh, wow. It's more likely than it's not that they trade that pick.
That they trade that, and then it's more likely back that they trade back
than up. But yeah, like I just wrote in 50 words or less. I think people are not talking enough about the possibility that they move up. And the reason that I say that is because
pick which side you're on here, buddy.
Well, no, I'm just saying like I think it's more likely back, but like nobody's talking about moving up, and I think they should be, because if they really covet one of those top offensive tackles, let's say a Mims, let's say a Guyton or a Fashanu, one of those guys, let's just say like they get within striking range. Eric DaCosta already said that, or Faltanu, not Fashanu. Eric DaCosta already said that like the depth in this year's draft is not great. So it would depend on how much you have to give up. I don't think he really wants to give up like third round picks and all that stuff. Like, but fourth rounders, if you're talking move up a few spots and you're giving up an extra fourth rounder, okay.
Right.
I'm fine with it. Because they have an obvious need.
Yeah. I agree. And I just think all of that makes sense. You know, having nine picks in a draft that Eric said is not that deep in comparison. There's fewer draftable players compared to other years. It seems like a lot of picks. It just seems like you would want less than that. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you trade picks and add a pick in a future year. Maybe you put a package together. Or maybe he was lying and he actually thinks it's the deepest draft of all time and he's just saying that to throw everybody off the scent. I don't know.
Now, really what he's saying is, you know, there's just not as many draftable players. And the reason is because there's just fewer juniors in this year's draft. Just fewer underclassmen declared. Now, that's really speaking to like sixth, seventh round or whatever. That's day three. Late day three, like you're just not going to have the quality that you would otherwise. So it's not like, I'm not trying to say, oh, a third round pick, fourth round pick is less meaningful this year. You know what I mean? Like, that's more you're willing to part with day three picks. So I don't think that the Ravens are really going to be a team that's willing to part with big time ammunition to make a big jump up. But if one of those tackles is getting into the mid 20s, like, okay, what's it take? I'm picking up the phone.
Mm-hmm. I think that of course, there's a lot of factors that go into it. I don't really see them moving up. I feel like if all of a sudden, I feel like they can just be patient. I really just feel like they can be patient. And if all of a sudden the tackles do get picked clean, then I go back to what we said earlier. Okay, now you take a corner who you feel like is a great player there. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, and then it's, we've seen this tape, you know, it's Daniel Jeremiah and Mel Kiper saying on the broadcast, how did this guy get to the Ravens at the end of the first round? This is unbelievable. I can't believe the league that this happened. And so I feel like they can be patient. I actually only, in terms of a trade, I'm putting it at 20%. I say 80% that the Ravens end up picking at number 30. I think they stick and pick. I just laid out not trading up. And in terms of trading back, I've been saying this for a few weeks now. I know you don't really see it the same way, but I just think that that fifth-year option that comes with the rookie contract comes at a value. And so, you know, when I asked Eric that question at the pre-draft press conference, he made the point, if we're giving that up, it better come at a premium. So, of course, he's not going to just say, yeah, we'll let that pick go for cheap. He's letting everybody know that it's going to cost a pretty penny. I think that it would, of course, depend on the players who are there. And if someone's trading up, it would probably be, if the Ravens are going to get what they want there, it probably, I think, would be somebody coming up to get a quarterback. Mm-hmm. But I just don't really see, unless those quarterbacks are there and a team wants to trade up just like the Ravens did 5 years ago with Lamar Jackson, I don't know that there's going to be a situation that makes sense. And I don't know that, I think that the Ravens will value that rookie contract. And I don't see them moving back. And they have holes to fill. So I think that 80% they stick and pick at number 30.
80%. That's high.
It is high.
That is very high. Okay. Strong take. I think this is more selfishness. I think you just want to pick so bad, like you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, maybe that's, I'm trying to speak it into existence.
It's exactly right. That's exactly right. Well, you bring up the quarterback situation. That is always, every year, a big player in this.
Yeah.
And
before we dive into the quarterback, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come down and break down that whole quarterback dynamic and how that could impact the Ravens. You're listening to The Lounge Podcast. We're coming to you from the SeatGeek studio. We also want to give a shout-out to our friends at DraftKings Sportsbook. They are an official sports betting partner of the Ravens. They've got a limited-time offer running that you don't want to miss. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today. Use the promo code FLOCK. If you are a new user, you can get a deposit bonus up to $1,000. Again, the promo code is FLOCK, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You need to be 21 years or older to play and physically present in Maryland. For help, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. or call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, so the quarterback situation. Mm-hmm. So just real quick, the first four picks are going to be gone well before the Ravens are on the clock. And those first four guys, that's Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, and J.J. McCarthy. They're going to be gone. I mean, they might be the first four picks in the draft. Mm-hmm. Then the wild cards there, you have Michael Penix Jr. out of Washington, and you have Bo Nix.
Mm-hmm. Out of Oregon.
And so, you know, do all six of those guys get picked before the Ravens are on the clock? Do you just see one through four, all quarterbacks go off the board and then everyone's waiting around? How do you see the quarterback situation playing out?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question. And I think that it's really Nix and Penix, are they going to be already taken before the Ravens are on 30, which would be great, because that would push two other players at positions of potential need down to the Ravens. That would be a great scenario. And if they're not taken already, then could a team take them, trade up with the Ravens to take them at number 30? Like the Ravens, you know, when they got Lamar Jackson, they traded to 32 with the Philadelphia Eagles and got Lamar. could somebody do that? Somebody make a move up, like let's say the Raiders, let's say the Saints. Those are two teams that are in the quarterback market. If for some reason the Patriots didn't take a quarterback at number three, they could be a team that would move up. So those two players are going to be, as always, the two fascinating pieces to watch. The Denver Broncos, to me, are a real wild card because they need a quarterback, first of all. And I just traded for Zach Wilson. That does not preclude them from taking a quarterback in the first round. Let's make that clear. But they don't have a second round pick. So like they're a trade back team, right? If they're going to take Bo Nix, most likely. They could stick and pick, but they're probably going to trade back. And I think it's a big question of whether like they trade back far enough where do they still pick him before the Ravens? Do they trade with another team? My whole trade-up scenario is kind of based on Bo Nix. I think the Chargers might trade him their pick, and then the Ravens trade with the Chargers to move up. And that's all around Bo Nix. And so I think the quarterbacks are just a fascinating group to watch.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't know what's better. Is it better that Bo Nix and Penix are gone?
Yes.
Or that one or both is sitting there, and now the Ravens have teams that are in the second round that are getting really hungry to come up and get them.
But there's a lot of teams, like they could go up with any number of teams, right? Like they don't have to trade with the Ravens because it's not like the 49ers are going to draft a quarterback.
No, they could.
Like, the Chiefs aren't going to draft a quarterback at 32.
No, like, but
and then if all the top teams in the second round all already drafted their quarterbacks, they don't have to move up there. So like, I don't know that those teams, the Raiders, the Saints, those teams that might draft a quarterback in the second round or consider trading up to the first round, like if there's a ton of incentive to move up.
There isn't, but all those same teams could be having the same conversations. The 49ers and the Chiefs could be having the same conversations with the same teams. Basically, they could try to manufacture a bidding war out there at the end of the first round if those quarterbacks are still on the board. And Eric DaCosta is such a master at working the board and guessing how this thing's going to play out. I do feel like there's potential, and this would be where EDC is, you know, like kind of in his wheelhouse, where he could go to work and there could be a bit of a bidding war there if a team wants to move up and, well, I'm talking to this other team, they're going to trade up and they call the 49ers and all that stuff is happening. I feel like that would be a very interesting dialogue if those quarterbacks are on the board. Generally speaking, it's just simpler. Get those guys gone, have a good player fall to you. That's great. That's just the best case scenario. And it, like, but I do feel like if these teams are getting quarterback hungry, they're getting real nervous thinking about someone else jumping them and they don't want to go to sleep Thursday night without getting their quarterback, then like you could have a scenario where you can have a mini bidding war and then maybe get higher value. And as we know, you know, DaCosta loves value. And if he feels like he's going to get blown away by a pick to move back into that second round for a team coming up to get a quarterback, then like if you're coming up to get a quarterback, you're generally willing to pay a premium already. And so like the Ravens could stand to benefit in that scenario.
Yeah, that's definitely a possible scenario. I think what's going to be more interesting for the Ravens to look out for are teams coming up to either trade ahead of them or with them to take a tackle. Now, teams are going to know the Ravens. If they have a tackle sitting there, the Ravens are probably going to take them. But like, again, back to my original point, I just don't know how the Ravens have these tackles all ranked, right? Like, they might think Kingsley Suamatia is every bit as good as Jordan Morgan, who might be as good a guard or a better guard as a tackle, right? And so, like, if a team or, like, whatever, they might think Tyler Guyton, like, some of these guys are have just as high upside as Tyler Guyton. Do they trade back? I mean, I'm just... ESPN's latest mock drafts that they released this morning from Jason Reed has the Ravens trading back from 30 with the Commanders to take Tyler Guyton. The Commanders take Tyler Guyton.
See, like, Jason Reed, my guy over there, predicting that the tackle's not only on the board at 30, but that he lasts into the second round.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Jordan Reed, my bad.
Yeah, sorry.
Guy, Jordan Reed.
Yeah, Jordan Reed. Yes, thank you.
I mean, I don't know. I just think that there's... the lack of consensus on the tackles, like, yeah, in the media sense, there's been kind of that continental shelf that I talked about, but I'm not so sure that that same shelf exists the way we see it necessarily for on teams' boards.
Yeah, yeah.
No, the other thing, teams could trade up for a wide receiver. Like, teams want wide receivers. You know, if Adonai Mitchell's sitting there, could some team come up and get him? Xavier Worthy, Keon Coleman. Some team could look, move up to get one of those guys.
They could, but when you look at the teams who are drafting there at the end of the first, particularly the Ravens and the Chiefs, they could also be in the receiver market.
Yeah, but
so
the
they
Ravens
may not
don't
be looking,
have to have one. If the Chiefs
they
are
don't
sitting,
have to.
If the Chiefs are sitting there next and some team just, wants a wide receiver before the Chiefs are on the board, you know, we got the 49ers who could take a wide receiver considering the whole Brandon Ayuk situation, and we have the Chiefs who could take a wide receiver considering Rashee Rice and just the lack of receivers.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to get a receiver before those teams are on the clock, they could certainly call up the Ravens if one of those guys is still there.
All this trade talk, should I amend my 80% prediction?
Maybe, maybe. I'm making a good case, aren't I?
So an interesting factor that you pointed out, the possibility of doing a trade with the Chargers at some point. We got this email. As always, you can email us at thelounge@ravens.nfl.net. This email comes to us from Barth, who says, could you address this point? Because it always bothers me. It's about teams hiring our scouts and how it impacts the strategy going into the draft. Let's take, for example, Joe Ortiz. He went to be the GM of the Chargers. He was very involved in the scouting and draft strategy with the Ravens before leaving. So he has a good idea of how the players that the Ravens like and they will be targeting. That's his concern. So how does that impact the Ravens draft strategy when you have a situation like this year where Joe Ortiz leaves? Obviously, he was scouting these guys. He has been for years. You know, he leaves during the offseason. Now it becomes the GM of the Chargers. Mm-hmm. What impact does that have on draft strategy?
Well, Joe Ortiz isn't around by the time that teams that the Ravens set their board, right? He doesn't know the ranking. He knows which players scouts are looking at, and I'm sure there are some conversations about some guys. So he might know some of the players that the Ravens kind of, there's a little buzz. Like, my scout came back, and he liked that guy. You know what I mean? But he doesn't know what Eric DaCosta is thinking exactly. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Eric DaCosta also knew of the possibility that Joe Ortiz could get a job. And so, like, there's some strategy there.
You know? So they were having meetings back in November, draft meetings. George is coming by, like, nah, you just, Joe's coming by. Nah, you got to sit this one out.
Yeah. I don't know if it's that. But, you know, like, once the season ends, it starts to move pretty quickly, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So it really, and Eric DaCosta is not in, like, heavy draft meetings during the season.
Yeah.
Right? So that stuff is all kind of being done within the scouting department. And Joe Ortiz is, of course, a part of that. So he's, like, hearing probably who scouts like and who stood out. But he doesn't know the board. And it's easy to like players, right? Like, but until you hear from Eric DaCosta what the board, how the board is set, you don't have a ton of information.
Yeah, you're limited, and you're really dealing with partial information, which to some extent means, like, you're dealing with no information.
Right.
But I do think, like, where it could come into play is, you know, using the, we talked about this earlier, like the Adonai Mitchell example. If he's there and for the Ravens at that spot at 30, and it's like, oh, Joe's like, I know that the Ravens love this guy. Right. I know it. No doubt, like, he was their guy. And so, like, that's where it could come into play, or one of the tackles. I know that they love Guyton or they love Mims. Like, you may have that knowledge, but you also, to your point, like, you don't know what calls DaCosta's getting to trade up or to trade back. All of that stuff is, like, you're dealing with the incomplete information. I do think, like, for 1 year, it has probably some level of impact. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's, like, totally draft strategy changing, but I think that there's naturally some impact and knowledge that exists. And then, like, moving forward from there, then you just, from a strategy and a philosophy standpoint, like, you have an understanding of the types of players that they like. On the same token, the Ravens have that same information in theory about Joe and the Chargers. Like, you know, if there's a player on the board, like, and the Ravens are looking at how things are playing out, they could certainly say, I know that Joe loves whoever, and that they're going to take this guy because Joe was all about this guy. So I think it probably cuts both ways. It's, you know, it's similar to when coaches leave. The difference is that, like, it's a much tighter turnaround. It's the off season, you know, a few month gap rather than an entire year in some situations for the coaches before you have to play a team again. But so yeah, I think it's a good question though, Barth. Really, really good.
Yeah. We had another question come in here real quick, Garrett. This one's from Jordan Fitchett. This one came in while we're recording here. So
nice.
Good timing.
Perfect timing. Jordan. Timing is everything.
Yes. He says, for the positions of need for depth in the future that no one is talking about, linebacker, safety, and running back, who would you guys stand on the table for, going back to George Kikinis' interview here, or be happy that the Ravens got them at any point in the draft? So do you have any guys, Garrett? Have you done your deep dive into those positions?
I honestly, I don't have a guy at any of those positions that I'm like, that is the safety in the sixth round who I would stand on the table for.
I got my guys.
You're going to change.
Don't you worry. Nah.
I'll have them when I finalize my seven-round mock tomorrow.
Yeah. All right. We'll see who
I'll
your
speak
guys
with
are.
Conviction
but,
then.
But now I'm putting my flag in, so don't take my guys. Okay? So the safety is Malik Mustafa from Wake Forest. This dude's the best tackling defensive back in the draft. He's a tank. And not just like, I'm not talking like highlight, like just blowing people up. But this dude is just a really good tackler. And I think if you're looking for kind of that box, you know, guy that can come down and hit hard, good and run defense, all that stuff, like, yeah, that's my guy. Now, Gino was more of a free safety. You know, he was interceptions, ball hawking kind of guy. But I like Malik Mustafa. I think he's got something.
All right.
And then I'll give my running back here. So my running back that I like is Trey Benson from Florida State. And you might go a little earlier than you want. You probably would, but the speed on this dude in the frame that he has, he's kind of a bigger guy, 6'1", 223, and he can move. I think Trey Benson's going to be pretty good.
They just run it back with, like, the big running back, Gus Bus, of course, Derrick Henry, just the big running back.
He's not quite Gus territory. He's not that
6'1", 220 is big. No, he's not quite Gus territory or Derrick Henry, but that's a big back.
Yep. But he
that's
can
a big
run.
Back. So as I mentioned, tomorrow we're going to drop our full 7-round mock. So we're going to dive into some more of these conversations and the details around that. And then also coming up on Thursday, we're going to do a live episode of the podcast, which is going to air at 7:30 p.m. coming up Thursday night. You'll be able to watch that on our app, our website, and our YouTube channel. We're doing that at a draft party that we're having for PSL owners, a select number of PSL owners who got tickets to that. You know, we've got all the construction going on at the stadium this year as we're getting that in place for this season. So we couldn't do a big draft party at the stadium like we've done in past years. That'll be back in the future. But so it's a smaller draft party for some select PSL owners, but anybody can watch the podcast. So we're going to do kind of set the table for everybody. Tune into us 7:30 Thursday night. Again, you can watch that on our app, our website, our YouTube channel, and we're going to get you just set the table for what's about to unfold Thursday night. So it's a fun week. We can't wait for everything that's in store over the next couple of days, but thank you for listening, and we will talk with you again soon.